We're going to continue with our discussion of the point of the mitzvah of chinuch, that is, Torah education for children, as it pertains to the mitzvah of sukkah. Now, the general rule is that before the child becomes bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, the parent has to engage them in what's called chinuch. As I said, chinuch is not ordinary Jewish education. That's true, but this is a specialized aspect of it. Chinuch classically refers to specific training in the performance of the mitzvos, as opposed to going to yeshiva. You're learning about the story of Pesach and Hanukkah and so on and so forth. That's generalized education. Chinuch, the mitzvah chinuch, means that when the child becomes ready for it, the child has to be trained in the actual performance of the mitzvah, according to all of the requirements that would pertain to an adult. Thus, by lulav, for example, on sukkah, you get a lulav for the child. And it's wrong to assume that for the child it doesn't matter whether the lulav is technically kosher or not. That would be incorrect, because he has to be trained in the proper performance of the mitzvah as though he were an adult.
Why?
The reason, that's a good question, the question is why. What's the reason for that? The question's being raised, why is this necessary? Why is it, I guess, no one's questioning the need to give the child a Jewish education. That, I assume, you're accepting. That pretty much makes sense at face value, because the child has a designation. The child is going to become bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, will then become obligated in doing mitzvahs. So how is the child going to access? How are they going to fulfill their responsibility as Jews? How are they going to fulfill the commandments if they're not prepared for it? Now, to say that at the age of 13 or at the age of 12 we're going to start, that hardly makes sense. A, because it takes a long time until you build up sufficient knowledge, but even more important than the knowledge aspect is the underlying desire. The child already is assuming a certain identity, especially in this society, when the identity is going to be influenced by the culture, by what it sees on television, the values, movies, sports, whatever it is. So if the child is not grounded in Judaism, what Judaism is, the foundation, the bases, and so forth, insofar as the child can understand, it's not going to have a Jewish identity. And by the time it's 13 already, you can be clearly moving in a different direction. And you've lost your influence over the child. The parental influence is a very important thing. Obviously, it shouldn't be misused. So that makes sense. No one's arguing. You have to give the child a good Jewish education, paving the way so that it makes sense to the child. And the child wants to be Jewish. However, I think the question is, okay, why do we have this subsection of education called chinuch, which is more specific, more particular? And that is that the child actually has an obligation, rabbinically, to perform the mitzvah, and it is the obligation of the parent to see to it that the child does so. So the child, at the appropriate age, when it's ready to do the mitzvah of matzah, the child must perform the mitzvah of matzah the same way that the parent does. It has to have shmura matzah, has to understand what the point of the mitzvah is, has to make the bracha, the two brachas, one for the matzah, one for the mitzvah, eat it in a reclining fashion, eat the correct amount, within the correct time, all according to the parameters that would apply to the adult. And if the child failed to do it in the appropriate way at the Seder, for whatever reason, the child ate the wrong matzah, it wasn't shmura matzah, and then realized it, this is a child who is obligated from the standpoint of chinuch. What happens? What do you have to do? The same thing an adult would have to do. Eat it again. You didn't fulfill the mitzvah. So the question's being raised, why is that necessary? The actual performance of the mitzvah as opposed to simply the generalized chinuch. You see that there are two aspects to Jewish life, to Jewish existence. And one is more in the realm of the abstract, the intellectual, the study part, which is vital. I mean, Talmud Torah keneged kulam. The most essential, quote-unquote, religious activity in Judaism is the study of Torah. And the study of Torah is not necessarily limited only to the specific content of Torah, but all knowledge, all genuine knowledge. The Rambam says that the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, the more a person understands of the creation of God and appreciates the wonders of God in the creation, the more it increases their love of God, and so on and so forth. So the most important thing a person does to perfect himself, obviously, is to gain knowledge. Knowledge is the basis of everything. However, our concept of knowledge is not just an abstract thing. That really remains extraneous to the person. It has to be implemented. It has to be internalized. And it has to be applied to action. So the performance of the mitzvos is extremely important. That all of the fundamental ideas of Judaism are embodied and made concrete through performance of various mitzvos. Thus, it's not enough for a person just to study about the enslavement in Egypt and the Exodus and the fact that there wasn't enough time to bake the matzos. That would be lacking something if a person did not actually perform the mitzvah itself. There's a certain benefit and a certain perfection on many, many different levels, for the individual, for the Jewish people, for the perpetuation, for a system, to have a system which is able to be perpetuated for all generations. A vital foundation of that system is the performance of mitzvos. And one of the perfections of an individual has to do with the way in which he performs the mitzvos. In order to have that perfection, a person has to study. The study is not enough. You've got to implement. Implementation. Those are the two elements, by the way. I assume in any area, in any skill that you're trying to develop, whether it be a physician, whether it be a skill, carpentry, sewing, music, whatever it is, you'll always find this balance between study, learning what there is to learn, even in music, hearing different kinds of music and how it's interpreted and so on and so forth. But certainly, when it comes to more concrete things, skills, medicine, exposition, explanation, but all that, just because you heard a brilliant explanation of how to perform a surgery and you understand every aspect of it, doesn't mean that you could do it. You now have to train yourself with that knowledge. You have to implement that knowledge by actually doing it and making the mistake and then correcting it and doing it again. So that is fundamental, that the perfection of man cannot be restricted purely to the realm of the abstract, because he's a concrete individual with a psychological makeup. And there could be a tremendous gap between what a person knows to be true and what the person actually, where their values are, where their emotions are. So a vital component of the chinuch, of the training of the child, is in the realm of the mitzvos, that he has to make the mitzvos a part of his life. And thus he has to have the proper attitude towards the mitzvos, the proper seriousness, the ability to perform the mitzvos. And when we're talking about that, obviously that presupposes that he's doing the mitzvah properly. Because the mitzvah is a divine construct. It's been designed by God. And it cannot be tampered with. Every aspect of the mitzvah must be performed appropriately. To make any changes in the mitzvah is a violation of the Torah. Thus, the child has to be introduced to this vital element, obviously, before he's bar mitzvah. There are two phases in his development. One is when he reaches the age of the maturity, which renders him capable of performing the mitzvah. Now, that varies from mitzvah to mitzvah. Depending on the nature of the mitzvah, he may be able to perform one mitzvah, but not another one, due to its complexity. However, when he's ready to perform the mitzvah, at that point in time, the obligation devolves upon him to actually perform it. But of course, that obligation is transferred to the parents, essentially. I mean, the child may be mature enough so that the parents don't have to remind him. Many children, prior to their bar mitzvah, are at an advanced level, and they naturally do the mitzvah. They don't have to be prompted by their parents. But that is the basic obligation. It's very, very important. It's also, on a psychological level, it makes an important impression upon the child. That's a very important element in Judaism. As far as the child is concerned, the child does not have independent values that it's thought about, that it's researched. What's real for the child is the parents. It's whatever the parents believe in, that's what they believe in, more or less. all things being equal, of course. And what the values of the parents are the ones that the child is really going to be exposed to. Now, in many cases, that's not a good thing because the parents don't have good values. So you have to, in many cases, you have to try and get around that or undo that. But you can understand when the parents have the proper values, how important it is that they be the ones that transmit it to the children. That's why, in terms of education, the primary obligation is on the father, first and foremost, but on the parents in the home. Because it has a totally different impact when they're receiving it from their parents. All things being equal, unless there's a very strained relationship, the child accepts. This is the way it is. This is what's true. The values of the parents automatically become the values of the children. So it's important that the parents should expose the child to the proper values. Certainly to do everything possible to keep away parents that recognize that they do partake within themselves. Now, obviously, no parents are perfect. Most of them are imperfect and do partake from time to time of things that they recognize as weaknesses in themselves. So as best as you can, you hide that from your child. Your child doesn't have to know everything about yourself. That's another thing you have to realize. You can censor certain things. Certain things that you do because of your own weaknesses, you don't have to expose other people to, necessarily. With that background, we're going to take up a problem that we left off with. And that is, what about with regard to the mitzvah of sukkah? That's a mitzvah like any other. You shall dwell in sukkos for 7 days. So the child also becomes obligated in sukkah because of chinuch. Of course, the question then arises, at what point is the child deemed to be subject to this mitzvah? So we had a discussion last week that the basic principle being when the child achieves a certain independence from its mother. When the child is very young, it's dependent upon the mother. So it really can't stake out an independent place from the mother. So since the mother lives in the house, because the woman is exempted from sukkah, time-bound, positive time-bound mitzvah, so the child is with the mother. But when the child becomes able to be separate from the mother, so then the obligation of chinuch, then the child is supposed to dwell in the sukkah. That's the beginning of the process of chinuch. That, just like for the adult, for 7 days, this is our place where we live. So we live in the sukkah. All right, so there was a difference of opinion as to at what point. At what point is the child considered to be independent? One said when it can perform its bodily functions by itself, can go to the bathroom basically, and doesn't need the mother to clean him up. And the other said that when he wakes up in the morning, he doesn't keep calling for his mother. That is, he stays in bed and keeps calling for his mother till his mother comes to get him. So that was a difference of opinion. We discussed the specifics of that difference last week. As far as we're concerned, all right, we could see the general point. Each one interprets it differently. At what point you have a certain independence, a certain separation from the mother. But the key point is that as long as the child does exist in that dependent state, it's not a candidate for the mitzvah of sukkah. That's understandable. Then there's another opinion which is very, very challenging. The Mishnah then records another case, and that is the law is expressed through a case that occurred that the daughter-in-law of Shammai the elder gave birth. So she had a baby, a newborn baby, and she was in the house, of course, and what he did was he disassembled the roof, that part of the roof over the mother and the child, and he supplanted it with schach for the sake of the child. Now the Gemara on Daf Kav Ches Amid Beis, that's 28:2, right before the Mishnah, questions the Mishnah, because the Mishnah brought it down as a Maisa. It states the halacha that the child, when the child no longer depends on the mother, it's obligated in sukkah. Then it brings it down. There was a case. There was an incident. Now, usually when the Gemara brings that, when the Mishnah rather brings down a Maisa, a case, it's meant to illustrate what was said previously. However, over here, it's coming out of nowhere. It contradicts. So that's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, Maisa listar? Do they bring down a case which actually contradicts? Because this principle contradicts it. Here we're talking about a baby. And until now, we were talking about a certain level of maturity. So the Gemara says, Chasire mechzerav ha'chi ketani. That's a typical device that in certain cases, words are missing from the Mishnah, and you have to interpolate. So that's what he's saying. You can figure out from the structure of the Mishnah that there are words that have to be put in there, which is to say that you should read V'shamai Machmir. After it tells us the first position, it says that Shammai is stringent, meaning he's strict. He doesn't agree with this. And Maisanami, and there was also an incident where his daughter-in-law, the daughter-in-law of Shammai Hazaken, gave birth and he undid the rooftop and he put schach because of the sake of the child. All right, so that resolves the problem. This is the technical problem. That resolves the problem in the Mishnah, which is not really our main concern. Because it doesn't change anything as far as we're concerned. There's another position. There's a machlokus. There's an argument in the Mishnah. Because the first position in the Mishnah says that a child that is not dependent on its mother is obligated in the sukkah, thereby giving us a criterion, which, as I said, you can argue as to what exactly that means, not dependent on the mother, but the general rule makes sense. Because to the extent that you're dependent upon someone, that's your place. Your place is determined by that dependency. However, Shammai's position seems to be completely radical. It's a very radical position, telling us that, in fact, even an infant, who's clearly totally dependent on his mother, what point would there be? Why would he do this? Now, you know, this is the kind of a story. You read stories like this, it sounds like it's very from and was so religious that even a child, and as though there's some mystical benefit and being in a circle. That's not the point. That is not true. That would not be a proper way to approach this. He's doing this in terms of his understanding of the halacha of chinuch. It wasn't done for any kind of a mysterious benefit, some kind of imaginary thing that there's some benefit, even though you're a child, just to be in the holiness of the sukkah. That's clearly not the way to go here. That's not what he's saying. So if that's the case, then what's the position? What is it based upon? On what basis would you hold that a child would be obligated in sukkah? And if he's not obligated in sukkah, so why take apart the house and build a sukkah over the child? There's a lot of difficulty with this idea that's being presented, in spite of the fact that it's creative and it's bold. As I said, that it's not enough. Because the suggestion is, this is a whole redefinition of the mitzvah of chinuch. That the mitzvah of chinuch, you're saying that the parent is obligated to perform an action whose content has no value whatsoever objectively, because there is no child there that's capable of receiving the training, the instruction. But the parent has to start doing it just so that the parent has to be in some kind of a training. It's really a parent for the training so that he'll never forget that he has to do this training and he'll keep doing it. It's kind of far-fetched. Now, if that's the case, I would say at a certain point in time, the father is going to have to teach the child Torah. Let's say he'll be teaching him the Parsha of the week. So then say the same thing, that when he's an infant in the crib, he goes in every night and he reads the Parsha. And then he starts teaching him the Mishnah. Someone's saying, well, people do that. Okay, fine. Now, what does that mean, people do it? And how do we evaluate that? Just because people do things, we know by now that people do a lot of strange things in the name of religion, assuming or thinking that this makes, that it's holier or whatever it is. The fact that people do something, well, you have to ask them. I'm not going to disparage people. People may do this for whatever reason. It may give them an incentive, and they're studying it for their own. I look, I'm not going into that. But the point is, nobody can legitimately do a thing like that and claim that this is part of his responsibility as a parent. That if he fails to do this, he's not being responsible with regard to the educational. Can't. Now, if this is the case, another difficulty with the theory that's been presented is that why is it that we only find this in this one particular case? Shouldn't this apply to every mitzvah? This doesn't apply to any other mitzvah. In every other mitzvah, the criterion is clearly established. Let me read to you from the Ritva. The Ritva says that the age of the child, the determination that he's reached the stage of chinuch, obviously he has to reach the stage of chinuch, where the obligation kicks in, differs from mitzvah to mitzvah. It depends. For example, with regard to Yom HaKippurim, there's one shear. When is he obligated to fast? There the law is very lenient because the child may not be strong enough to fast for a whole day. So when he gets closer to Bar Mitzvah, you start training him with hours. And then, maybe about a year or so before, he fasts the whole day. They were very lenient. You wait a long time because of the difficulty of the mitzvah. And here there's a different shear, and that shear is when he no longer requires the mother. When it comes to lulav, the Gemara says, katan hayadel ananeya, a child that knows how to conduct the waving of the lulav. The lulav has to be waved in a different way according to the words and so on and so forth. So then you're obligated. Tefillin is more strict. A child that knows how to guard the sanctity of the tefillin. He has to have a clean body and so on and so certain things he can't do while he's wearing tefillin. And each thing goes in accordance with its requirement. Okay, then he goes on to a discussion of the argument over here about a child that does not require the mother. Now, from this it is clear that the entire basis of the mitzvah of chinuch is to train the child in the performance of mitzvos. You have to have a recipient. And if the child is not there, the child has not developed to that point, then, well, you'll ask me, what about doing the lulav before the child knows how to do it properly? Where you get one of these imitation set, a chinuch set, as they call it, which wouldn't be, it looks good, it looks the same. Let's say you have a lulav, which is not perfect, it's got a defect, it's got a flaw. So you have a child, but this child is, say, a year, it's a year before the child will be ready. Let's assume that the age would be 7, the child is 6. So, would there be any point in taking the kid, taking the child to shul, giving him this lulav? The lulav is not kosher, we know it. He goes through the motions. Would there be any point in that? There I would say there's a point, but it's not the obligation. It's not obligatory. But that's part of the general training. Bear in mind, what we're talking about is the specific training in mitzvos. The general training begins when the child is very young. On Shabbos, you take him to the table. The rabbi says you should give the child special sweets, even when he doesn't understand the first thing about Shabbos, because it'll make an impression on his unconscious mind. And he'll always have a pleasant association. That Shabbos should be a fun day for the child. As he gets older, he notices it, and then everything fits together. Oh, it's Shabbos. Shabbos is exciting. That's not the specific mitzvah of chinuch. So the same thing over here, that if a child has a general understanding, he's not yet ready to do it perfectly, but he could do it. So yeah, what's wrong that a child knows that this is a lulav and he knows what they are, even if he didn't do it perfectly. He did it with a chinuch set. However, I can't accept the idea that Shammai was instituting a completely different premise, a completely different position, and saying that you just go through the motions. You go through the motions with a child and put him in a sukkah, even though he's completely oblivious, and you fulfill the mitzvah that way. That, to me, doesn't make any sense. I mean, where's the chinuch? What kind of chinuch is that? To say that we're just doing this to the child, the father rather, to habituate the father to the recognition that he has to train the child, I think that's going very, very far. I mean, that doesn't ring true to me. So again, we have to try and figure out what's the basis of his position. It's difficult to say that he's doing this because really he holds that women are chayev in sukkah. Because ish v'ishah. And he's only doing this to keep the child in there so that the woman can be they could all be, but it's really for the sake of the mother. Because he doesn't register this complaint when the Gemara is taking up the issue of women. When the Gemara is taking up the issue of women, it should have said that Shammai holds women are chayiv. But if Shammai held that women are chayiv, I guarantee you, even if he held women are chayiv, what would he say about a woman who's just had a baby? She's putter, because even a man is putter. If a man is sick, haven't we learned? We've learned this year that there's tremendous leniency when it comes to sukkah. If the man is in pain, and he'd be more comfortable indoors, he doesn't have to be in pain, because that diminishes, it takes away from the very notion of teishvu ke'ein taduru, that to dwell, to make it a comfortable dwelling place. So it's only if he's comfortable. Certainly if the man is sick, he's exempt. So even if you were to posit that a woman is obligated in sukkah, but certainly if she just had a baby, she's exempt. She's exempt from other mitzvahs that she normally, you know, certainly she'd be exempt. So why build a sukkah over her? Shammai wouldn't hold, let's assume you were exempt from the sukkah because you didn't feel well and you went into the house. Would he then say that to remove the ceiling over you and put tzchach there so that you can fall? No, you're putter, you're exempt. I will now read from the Ritva his explanation of the case. Here's what he says. Hachi Garcina, this is the correct wording of the Mishnah. The Shammai is machmir, Shammai is strict, umaisa, etc. And then that provides you with this story. Uboy lemeimar, and the Gemara wants to say, umachmir min adin, that he's machmir, he's stringent according to the law. This is his understanding of the mitzvah. He holds that the father is obligated to do this, that is to bring the child, even the infant, midioraisa, from the Torah. It's a biblical obligation for him to do this. The teshvu ke'ein taduru, because the mitzvah of sukkah is teshvu, that you should dwell ke'ein taduru, as though you live, as though you reside, to reside in the sukkah. Who? Ishuvanov, a man and his children. Tilagabe the day midrash hachi. Because it's an interesting position. Because the question I'll ask about, he's really saying as follows. According to Shammai, it turns out it's not about chinuch. That's what's strange. It's not about chinuch, but he maintains that when it comes to a child, it's completely different, and you don't wait for the determination. There's a whole new principle that supersedes the ordinary principle of chinuch. The ordinary principle of chinuch is when the child is ready to relate to the mitzvah. Here he apparently is saying that it's superseded. The issue of the child is superseded because the education of the child, the chinuch of the child, is going to be incorporated into the very obligation of the parent himself, because he holds that the man's obligation is to dwell in the sukkah, he and his children and his sons. Whoa, one second. Why? Even now, the question I'll ask you, according to him, what about the wife? What about the wife? We just had a whole discussion about that even though women are exempt because it's positive and time-bound, but since we say that the sukkah has to replace your home, replicate the home, and just like the nature of dwelling is man and wife, so the woman has to be in the sukkah too. Otherwise, it's not like the nature of, right? If we rejected that, that was rejected. That was a possibility, a very serious possibility. But after all is said and done, the Gemara rejected that and said that that element of the normal household does not have to be replicated in the sukkah. So what does Shammai hold about that? Does Shammai hold that the woman has to be there too? Because of teshvu, ke'ein taduru, the answer is no. He doesn't hold. So interesting that Shammai holds that even though he lives with his wife normally all year round, when it comes to the sukkahs, she does not have to be in the sukkah. However, that's not the same when it comes to his sons. When it comes to his sons, they must be in the sukkah. Not because of the education of the son, but because otherwise it's not a sukkah. As far as the parent is concerned. If that's the case, so what his position is, of course, then the question is, it has nothing to do with the subject of chinuch. Why is it being brought down in this Mishnah? So apparently you have to answer that you're right. But he has a principle which incorporates the purposes of chinuch, that you don't need a separate demarcation for when is the child obligated because of the child? Because the father is going to be bringing the child in every year, even when he's an infant, purely because it's the fulfillment of the mitzvah of the parent. He says, "V'hu anachon," and that is correct. Let me correct what I just said. That's his first answer. His first answer is that Shammai did not mean to impose a new definition of chinuch to include even a katan who's an infant, but rather it's purely for the sake of the mitzvah of the parent, because he does believe that the presence of the child, the presence of the child in the sukkah, is an essential component of the dwelling of the father. And without it, it would not be considered a sukkah. That's his first answer. Inami, or else. He gives a different answer now. V'hu anachon, and this is the correct answer. So that's the way it should be read. That the Ritvag, this was his first answer he just gave us, and now he's saying another interpretation. So he's revisiting, he's grappling with this issue. It's a tough issue. And this is what he considers to be the correct answer. Machmir b'chinuch katan b'sukkah midrabanan. Now he's getting back to our categories. No, that Shammai machmir means he's machmir, he's stringent with regard to the requirements of chinuch. L'chaivo sheyochal imo b'sukkah, to obligate him to eat with him in the sukkah. Kivan di efsher, since it is possible, v'chazi lahachi, and he is fit for this. Shekein ha-din b'chol mitzvah. That is the law by every mitzvah. L'chaivo b'chinuch, to obligate him in chinuch. Kol zaman she'efshir, as long as it's possible. V'roi l'kach, and it's suitable, it's possible, it's feasible. The child is fit for it. Fitness for it. Rabbanan savri, and the Rabbanan hold, that kivan the imo peturim in asukkah, since the mother is pater from sukkah, she's exempt. Ein roi lechinuch sukkah, biyot shetzarach leimo. Then he's not suitable for the chinuch of sukkah as long as he requires his mother. The lekela frushe mine, because you can't separate him from the mother. This is a very, very interesting. It's a fascinating shot. Forget it. His first shot was a totally different angle, and in his first interpretation, he didn't maintain it's an argument about chinuch. It's just that one side was approaching it from classical chinuch perspective and saying the child has to be mature when he separates from the mother. Then Shammai came and said, there's a separate principle over here. The child must be there as an infant because the child's presence in the sukkah is essential to the mitzvah of the father. That's answer number one. He then gives you a different possibility, which he himself says is the correct one. So he offered us the first one because it's a logical, theoretical possibility. Then, however, he returns to the subject and he says that it makes more sense to say that they're arguing about chinuch. And that Shammai, strange as it seems, Shammai is establishing an obligation of chinuch even for an infant. Now that sounds very amazing. Like, on what basis? What is the basis for that? He says that if you study the criteria that I use to determine the age of eligibility for the mitzvah, age of obligation, he says two things. It must be that it's possible. That is to say, let's say, for example, a child, everybody agrees, when he's able to shake the lulav, when he has the ability to learn how to wave the lulav, to shake the lulav, then he becomes obligated in lulav. So now how do you interpret that? Two things, apparently. He uses two criteria. It's efshir, it's possible. That is to say, first you have to remove any impediments. There can't be anything blocking the way. I assume he means something extraneous can be blocking the path. V'roy l'kach. And second is that he has to be fit for the activity. So that, let's take the case of shaking, when he knows how to shake, so he's roy, he's suited for it. So now he's saying like this, what is the mitzvah of sukkah that a person should establish dwelling in the sukkah? So when would this, according to the criteria of chinuch, when would it come into being? Well, when it's possible. And when he's suitable for it. So apparently he's saying that, so why can't an infant be in the sukkah? If you do it this way. For example, obviously, the main impediment over here, and one could argue, is it really possible, or is he suited for it? The main impediment over here is the dependency on the mother. That's what he sees. Why can't the child be in the sukkah? So, he resolves that. He doesn't ignore it. He's not going to take the child away from the mother. That wouldn't make any sense. So what he's doing is, if it's possible, to have them both in the sukkah. So if you have a room where you could remove the roof and put schach on it, so the mother is comfortable, she has everything she needs, the child is with her, so then you fulfilled the obligation. You've removed the impediments. That's what he seems to be saying. Is the child fit for a sukkah? Well, why not? If you provide what's necessary, you make a little playroom. As the child gets older, you make him a little playroom. It would appear, according to the second answer, that this is not necessarily the sukkah of the father, although it could be. But it doesn't have to be, because the requirement that the child be there for the sake of the father, that was the first answer. But according to the second answer, he's rejecting that. In the second answer, he's saying it's not because of the father. The father has his own sukkah, does not need the child there, just like he doesn't have to have his wife there. That's not part of the conditions of dwelling. So then it's just a requirement in terms of chinuch. Doesn't have to be with the father, could be. Or if he fulfills, if he does this. It seems that this was Shammai was doing this for his daughter-in-law, so it wasn't even his own child. To fulfill the mitzvah, you just remove the covering, the roof covering, whatever, put up the schach, and it's purely for the child. So this is a very radical interpretation of the mitzvah of chinuch. What's the argument over here? Now, we don't paskin like this position. We do not paskin that way, so don't get nervous about your little babies, that you're going to have a little sukkah for them in the maternity ward. You know, you have to have a special area for them. In the hospitals.
You don't have to.
Maternity ward will have to be on the top level, on the upper level. So there's nothing on top. And you can just make a hole in the ceiling and put schach down. And I'm sure the hospital will be very happy to accommodate you. We have to take the position seriously. We have to understand that it's a legitimate halachic position. The fact that we don't paskin like it is irrelevant as far as we're concerned. That doesn't diminish the position in any way. So thus, we have to take it seriously. You can't just say, well, we don't paskin that way, therefore I don't have to think about it. No, it's a legitimate halachic position. And as such, we don't need to understand it. It's still difficult to understand. You're right, okay, theoretically you're right. A child doesn't care where he is. So you can put a child in the sukkah, you can put him in the house. But again, what kind of chinuch is this? What's his underlying theory of chinuch that leads him to this conclusion? We're still struggling to understand this idea. If we're going to be honest, and if we assume that there's a purpose to chinuch. Obviously, there is. It's very, very important. And there is a requirement. The requirement is the child has to be able to relate to that particular mitzvah. It's hard to say that it's just so that the child could then physically do it. Wouldn't it make sense to say that the child begins to benefit it? From that point on, he benefits. He's doing the mitzvah. He's aware of that. He's cognizant of that. To now go so far and to say that it's beneficial action of chinuch, even if the child is completely oblivious. A child, an infant, doesn't have any awareness of anything. So what is it learning? It's learning absolutely nothing. Would you say that there's a difference? You're going to tell me that two children, one of them, the parent started putting him in the sukkah when he was an infant. Another one, not until the child was 6 years old. You're going to tell me there's a difference? Don't explain it. Don't try and answer it and say, well, in this case, you see the attitude of the parent had to... No. Let's just isolate all extraneous factors, assuming that the attitudes of the parent are identical. Just the mere fact that this child has been in the sukkah since it was a baby, and this child... Are you going to tell me there's a difference? When the child grows up, the child has a deeper attachment to me. I think then you're positing mystical things. In my mind, all positions agree that with other mitzvos, for example, like lulav, they all agree. Shammai agrees that it's until he's able to wave the lulav.
Right, but that doesn't mean comprehension.
And the same is true with regard to all the other requirements. It's just a question of the theory that you extrapolate. This is important. The starting point is where they both agree. No one is contesting the Gemara that says with each mitzvah, when the child is roy, when it's possible and when he's suited for it. That is the determining factor. That is the criteria. However, they disagree in the case of a katan. Shammai's, the way he understands this phenomenon of criteria, it would apply even to sukkah. When it comes to sukkah, you don't have to wait any period of time. Those criteria are present immediately because he's fit for it and it's suitable. It's possible, rather. It's possible and he's suited for it if you take into consideration the situation of the mother. So you could do that. The others say that no. They don't agree to that. Now, maybe if you accept this, so what's their criterion? What's their issue? What's their issue? If it's just a question of when it's possible. If you look at it as being when it's possible, so then he has a point. And that's what you said. You said it doesn't matter how much gain there is. That's not the issue. Is it possible? As soon as it's possible, then you start doing it. And so for here, it's possible. So then I'll ask the others, so why don't they agree? Even the fact that it seems strange and it seems unreasonable, that's no criterion for halacha. If that's your requirement, that's the way the halacha is structured. Bear in mind also the other position, which talks about the child not depending on the mother, whether it be to go to the bathroom, whether it be when he wakes up in the morning, he doesn't call mommy, mommy. They're not addressing themselves either to the extent of the meaning. That criterion just deals with one thing. Capable. He's capable of being in the sukkah. He can be separated. So, if that's the case, but it doesn't really speak about the meaning that he gets from it, that issue is not being addressed. Because that's just talking about one thing. A child has to be next to his mother. So he can't be away from the mother. Just because he can be away from his mother doesn't mean that he partakes of the idea of the sukkah. So it's minimal. That part of it is minimal. But that's the mitzvah. This is what he has to live in the sukkah. We've reached a point where perhaps we understand Shammai. If that's what Shammai is saying, if Shammai is saying that the obligation kicks in pretty much when the obstacles are removed. So then, well, what about what's the position of the Chachamim? The Chachamim say he's not obligated until he's independent of his mother. Well, you can't say that the reason that they hold is because then it has meaning. That's not a criterion for meaning, that's just a criterion for being able to do it. So what is the argument? He's saying if that's all that it takes, it's possible to do it. It's achievable. Very practical kind of a consideration. So let's go with Shammai then. It's achievable, just like he did it. He removed the roof and put the schach on. It's very achievable. Let me offer the following theoretical construction. We all agree with the facts that when the child knows how to wave the lulav, so the obligation of chinuch kicks in. So now there's two ways that can be formulated theoretically. Are we saying that those factors create the responsibility? There is no responsibility in existence until they come into being. That defines the individual as being obligated in chinuch? Or no? Really, as soon as the child comes into existence, is your child, the obligation is there. Except the absence of the ability to relate to it is the exemption. That is to say, you're exempted because he can't. It's not possible. He's not suitable. Two things. Efshir. It is possible, and he's suited, Then there's no, so to speak, there's no longer any excuse. It doesn't create the obligation. But the absence of those two factors provides you with an exemption. Let's put it that way. If that is the case, then let's take a look at a child. That's what he says. As soon as the situation is such where there are no impediments, it's not that he has to have the positive qualification of being able to do this or that. It's the absence of that which makes it impossible. It's an impediment. He doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know how to do it, so then you're exempt. Now, once he knows how to do it, there's no longer any exemption. It's a marker. It is, so to speak, a marker. Now, until now, we've been operating on the assumption, pretty much, without expressing it, without being explicit about it, which one have we been working on? That the presence of those factors creates the obligation. It defines a change in the maturity level of the child, and now he is deemed to be a child of chinuch. That's one way of looking at it. It would appear that the way Shammai is going over here is totally different. He's saying no. When the child is in a certain state, that it's there's no obstacles. He's suited for it. It's possible. It's possible that he's suited. That's what he's saying. There's no obstacle. So then you have to start doing it right at that point. It's irrelevant whether the child is going to gain. You can't measure it in terms of the gain. That's the process of habituation, to start doing it. Yeah. So the truth is that the chinuch process actually begins, or can begin at a point where the child, from the mental level, may not be getting that much out of it, or maybe not getting anything out of it. Doesn't matter. There's a system. That's the way the system is structured. It's a halachic system. So it gets started. What's the starting point? That's the real question. What is the starting point? At what point does he perform the mitzvah with the child? Here the mitzvah is that he should be dwelling in the sukkah. The child has an address. That becomes his address. That's it. Every sukkah. Now, as a result, it doesn't mean to say that every time you do it with the child, he has to benefit from every particular experience. What does he benefit from? From the overall process, which is going to keep going until he reaches bar mitzvah. So that's it. My objection has been removed. My objection was based upon the assumption that every particular instance there has to be a benefit. No, it's a system that's put into place. And as a result of the system in its entirety, the child will emerge as someone who appreciates and knows how to do mitzvahs. So therefore you can't ask the question, what about this case? This case you didn't get much out of. Who cares? It's measured as a whole. It's a continuum. And the only legitimate question is, at what point does the process begin? Oh, so that's what Shammai is saying. It has to have a starting point. The starting point is when there's no obstacles. Indeed, it would seem that this is such a strong idea, such a compelling notion, and see how far removed it is from where we started out. Now, this notion, which at first glance seemed to be so strange, now it makes perfect sense. Then what's the position of the Chachamim? They say that the infant is not obligated. See, now we could say it. Now it doesn't seem ridiculous to put a child in a sukkah. And they say, until he no longer is dependent on the mother. So the Ritva says, the Rabbanan hold, that since the mother is exempt from the sukkah, it's not roy, it's not suitable for the chinuch of sukkah, as long as he requires the mother. So that means to say that they do accept his premises. According to this, they accept that premise. And that is that he has to be roi for the mitzvah. He has to be suitable for the mitzvah. So now it's just an argument, is the infant suitable? One side says he is. The other side says no, he's not, because he's dependent on his mother. And the mother is not in the sukkah. So there's one further step that we have to take. What's that one further step? The question would be, how do we define roi? Does roi have to be manifest from the standpoint of the child himself? From the standpoint of the child himself, he's not suited because he's dependent on the mother. There's an extraneous factor. And thus the Chachamim say that since the child is dependent upon the mother, in and of himself, he's not suitable for it.
Why?
Because he can't separate from his mother. We all agree that we're talking now not about an issue of when he's going to benefit from it. We're talking about the starting point of a process. The process is extremely significant and meaningful, which will be carried out over a long duration. What is the starting point? They all agree that it's possible, and roi. Roi means suited for it. So now the question is this infant deemed to be suited? Well, it all depends. Shammai says that we look at it, while it's true that the child is not suited in terms of himself, dependent upon the mother, but he is suited once you have the idea that you can include him and the mother together by putting a roof, by putting a schach over the roof, so then that removes that problem. The way how you measure suitability is what they're arguing about. How is suitability measured? Shammai says that the dependency on the mother is not an obstacle because it can be addressed. There's nothing in Sukkah that prevents it from being addressed, but that's the point of the Maisa. That's why they're bringing the Maisa. The Maisa is to illustrate the point. The other side says it may be true, you can address it, but the obligation does not come into being until he's intrinsically roi. Here he's not intrinsically roi, he's only accidentally roi. So that is to say, from a purely intrinsic standpoint, from the standpoint of the child alone, looking at nothing else, he's not roi because he needs his mother. Say somebody needed an oxygen tank. And an oxygen tank is in the room. Can't bring it outside. So then he's not roi, right? He can't be separated from the oxygen tank. But let's say I had a solution where I could make a sukkah over the oxygen tank. Now he becomes roi. But you may say that's true, you have a solution, but that's just it's not intrinsic, it's just accidentally. Practically speaking, you've made him roi. But the halacha of roi, see, now you're dealing purely with halachic criteria. That's where it gets a little bit difficult. Because you're not dealing with common sense criteria. What makes sense to me, or what's pragmatic. It's not a pragmatic thing, it's halachic formulation. Now, the Chacham is saying it doesn't make sense that just because it is practically feasible to have the child in the sukkah, because you could do so by including the child and the mother in the sukkah. If you do that, then you say the child, now you've solved the problem. The child is dependent upon the mother. Mother and child are both in the sukkah. So the child thereby becomes roi for the sukkah. That's practical. So now it becomes a matter of how do you evaluate roi, the phenomenon of roi. Is roi measured by practical criteria or is roi measured by intrinsic criteria? If it's measured by the intrinsic status of the child, he's a dependent. He's a dependent and he's not inherently independent and ready for sukkah.